Grouping of mind, vital breath, desire, essence and virtue with the associates is called Panchvarga or the five groups. A living being identified with the nature of the Panchvarga cannot be free of them without knowledge or knowing. The disease arising out of the subtle elements, like the mind and the rest of it, seems to be covering the self, and it is called the seed body. It is also known as the knot, or complex of the heart. And the consciousness dwelling inside is called the Shatagya, or the knower of the field. Sarvasa Upanishad.
Now, the Rishi is discussing about the complexes of the mind, complexes of the consciousness. Why we are just a complexity? Why? Why there is no innocence and no simplicity? Why everything is just a knot, just a confusion, just insanity inside? If we can open a mind, then we will see just anarchy there, chaos. We go on somehow managing ourselves, but inside there is nothing which can be said a cosmos. Inside there is chaos, simple chaos. This is a miracle that we can manage ourselves. This seems impossible. How these complexes are built, how they are formed, how we help them form, and how many complexes are there? There are five divisions of all complexes. One is the mind. The first complex is the mind. The Eastern mysticism have always looked mind as the disease, as the basic disease. It is just the opposite from the Western attitude towards life. The Greek mind, which is the originator of all Western thinking, the Greek mind always looked towards mind as the supremest thing. Mind is the peak for the Greek attitude, for the Greek thinking. For Aristotle, mind is the peak. Mind is the most evolved energy. But to the Eastern mind, mind has been just a disease. That's why East couldn't develop science. Because if mind is disease, then you cannot develop science really. Because science has to be developed with mind. Greek mind could give the impetus to the Western mental evolution. So they could create a very complex structure of science and scientific knowledge. But the structure has come there, the structure is there now. But the consciousness, the human being itself, has lost. It has been at a very big cost. Machines have evolved, but the creator itself is just feeling empty and meaningless now. Technology has developed, and now we can create with this technology a very different world. But the very interest to create a different world is no more there. Sartre or Camus or others, they all feel just there is no sense in existing at all. There is no meaning. Sartre says we are condemned to be alive. Condemned to be alive. There is no need. There is no purpose. Nothing is to come out of all this effort. It is just futile. Camus asserts that the only philosophical problem, the only metaphysical problem now is suicide. The only possibility which we can do, in which we can be really free and active, seems to be suicide. All else is just meaningless. This had to happen, because with mind, ultimately, there can be only madness and suicide. With mind, ultimately, there can be only meaninglessness and an effort to forget it. So the whole West is now trying how to forget through chemicals, through alcohol, through so many methods, how to forget oneself. Because life is so meaningless that to be aware is to be in suffering. To know it, the misery all around, the suffering all around, and the meaninglessness of it, to be aware of it is too much. It creates anguish. So it is better to forget it somehow and drop into a world of dreaming. Chemicals can help. You drop out of the world. They say you turn on. Where you turn on? You turn on really to a dream world. There you can find meaning. There you can find purpose. There you can find against the romance and the poetry. There. But not when you are awake, aware, conscious. And they say these chemicals are helping expansion of consciousness. This is absurd. They are not helping expansion of consciousness. They are helping only expansion of dreaming process. They are helping only to dream more beautifully, more deeply, to dream more intensely. They are not helping consciousness. They are helping unconsciousness. They are helping. Deep processes of susupti, of sleep and dreaming. This had to happen, because with the mind you cannot go beyond this point. With mind there is no meaning, there cannot be. With mind there is logic but no meaning. With mind there is reason but no life. With mind you can create structures, dead, mechanical, but you lose the track of existence, of life, of being, of consciousness completely. Mind, this Rishi says, is the first disease, the basic disease in a way. Why? Mind is a disease. Because mind is just a disturbance. Mind is just a disturbance in consciousness. It is not your nature. It is just a disturbance. The moment there is no disturbance, there is no mind. And this state of no mindness is the state of consciousness, expansion of consciousness. You drop into yourself, not into dreaming, not into projections, into yourself, consciously, with full alertness. You come to your center the moment mind is not there. Meditation means how to be not a mind. How to be not a mind. Meditation means how to create the state of no mindness. It doesn't mean unconsciousness. It means conscious and still without any disturbance in the consciousness. Conscious with no ripples, with no waves, with no vibrations. Conscious as a deep, calm, silent pool with no ripples over it, with no disturbances on the surface. Just a calm, silent pool with no breeze to disturb. Just mirror-like. With the mind, one goes on being disturbed more and more, and then this whole process of disturbance is self-perpetuating. One disturbance creates 10 more, and those 10 create 100 more, and this is self-perpetuating. And then you are in a vicious circle. With this mind, something can be done. That is, you can travel outwardly. You can go more into the world. But the more you go into the world, the far off you are from yourself. And the more you have gone far, the track back is lost. Then you only remember that there is a home, but there is no way how to get back. And we continue to remember there is a home. There is a homesickness always. Somewhere present, there is some home, one has to go back, but there is no way. And we continue and we try to find out the home with the mind itself which has led us astray. Then we go into scriptures, then we go into words, then we go into philosophies, metaphysical systems, and then we are lost more, in even more deeply. And the track is not found at all. The track can be found only if you begin to feel and understand that mind is the disease. So you cannot go back with mind. The mind cannot be used as a vehicle back. It cannot be used as a passage. It is not a door towards consciousness. It is a door towards the world, towards the objects, not towards the subjectivity. That's why it is said a disease, a complex. The second is prana, life itself. Rather than life, the lust for life. There is a deep fear of death. And there is a deep lust to continue anyhow, to live anyhow. Life itself seems the end. Life cannot be the end itself. If life itself is the end, then one will have to exist on the periphery. Something must transcend life itself. Something must be higher than life itself. Otherwise, life can have no meaning. If you say that life itself is the end, then life is bound to be meaningless. Because meaning comes from the beyond. Always from the beyond. Something for which you exist gives the meaning. That's why we create many so-called meanings all around us. Money becomes the meaning because you live for it. Power becomes the meaning. Prestige becomes the meaning. You create meanings, but those are just bogus meanings. Because really, if life is at peril, you will be ready to lose power, money, everything. So you can just deceive. But that deception can never become the reality. Life remains above them. They are not beyond. They cannot be. That's why in the West, so much feeling of frustration and meaninglessness has come. That's an obvious corollary of life taken as the end. Life originates in something and then again dissolves in something. Life comes up and then goes down and is dissolved. So the original source of life must be beyond life. It comes out of it and then goes back, just as a wave raises itself and then falls down into the ocean. The ocean remains beyond the wave. The wave comes and goes. It is there this moment, and the next it is gone. The ocean is behind, beyond. Life is just a wave. Existence is beyond life. So one who begins to be too much involved and too much attached, too much infatuated with life loses the existential source of life itself. Life is just the periphery. The center is existence. We have called that existence the God. We have called that existence the moksha. We have called that existence the nirvana. This is something very delicate to be understood. Really, we have never said that God exists. We have said rather, God is existence. Those who say God exists don't know what they are saying. Man exists. God cannot exist in the same way. Trees exist. The earth exists. The sun exists, but not God. Because a tree may go out of existence, man may not exist, the sun may not exist, but God cannot be conceived as not existing. God is existence. God is isness. So really to say God is to repeat. God means is. God means isness. That isness is beyond life. Life is just a wave on the ocean of isness. So we are separate as waves, but not as the ocean. We are separate on our peripheries, but not on the center. On the center we are one. So many waves on the ocean, but in the ocean they are one. But no wave will be able to conceive it. Because it seems so absurd. How a wave can conceive that all the waves around are one with it? Because when another wave is just rising up, one is just dying and falling down. If waves are one, then they must fall simultaneously, they must rise simultaneously. That's why we are saying, if we are all the same, then how one is rich and how one is poor, then how one is young and how one is old, and how one is born and how one is dying. We must be separate, obviously. Then how one is intelligent and one is not, and one is beautiful and one is not. We must be different. We must be separate. But we are not. There are small waves and there are big waves. There are waves which go higher. There are waves which cannot go. But still they are same. In the ocean they are same. If you are just aware of your wave-like life, then you cannot go in. Then this becomes a disease. And if you are aware that you are a wave, then you must be afraid. You are bound to be afraid of death, of dying, because every wave is to die. You are seeing every wave is dying, coming up and down. So you are afraid. This fear comes because you have not known the oceanic existence which is yours. You have known only the wave existence, which means life, which means prana. So the Rishi says the second bondage, the second complexity, the second division of diseases is lust for life. What does it mean? It means if one has to go deep in existence, one has to be ready to die. This readiness to die is the basic quality of a religious mind. This is what constitutes the very essential core of being religious. This readiness to die, This doesn't mean a societal tendency. This doesn't mean any societal tendency. Because really, all those who commit suicide because of lust for life. This may look paradoxical. But never a Buddha has committed suicide. Never. Why? A person who is not in the least lusting for life, desiring for life, why he is not committing suicide? He must commit. Buddha will say, I am so indifferent to life, I cannot be so infatuated with death. So indifferent with life, how I can be so infatuated with death? To me, the both mean the same. If life is, okay. If death is, okay. A Buddha okays everything. He cannot choose. Whenever someone commits suicide, really, he is imposing conditions on life. He is saying, life must be like this, otherwise I commit suicide. I must get this woman. I must get this post. I must get this and that. If I am not getting, I can live only with my conditions. Then if there is no fulfillment of my conditions, I am ready to die. Really, this readiness to die is not readiness to die. He is asking too much. He is asking too much of life and out of life. He is so filled with lust that he is imposing even conditions. This death is just a revenge. Just a revenge. Revenge with life, because life could not fulfill the demands. Revenge with life. I will destroy life if life is not going to be what I desire it to be. This is a revenge. This is violence. So when I say readiness for death, it means no lust for life. So whatsoever comes, one is always in a welcoming attitude, in a receptivity. Whatsoever happens, one is ready. Even death. Lust for life is the disease. This readiness, simple readiness to die, unties the lust for life. The third complexity is that of desires. We don't live in existence, we live in desires. Really, we don't live in the world at all, we live in desires. Our life is not here and now, it is always somewhere else where the desire is arrowed. It may be anywhere, but it is never here. Never here, because desire needs time. Desire cannot be here. Can you desire anything in the present moment? The moment you desire for the future. You cannot desire here and now. Here and now there is no desire, there is no possibility of desiring. Desire needs space, that space is time. Desire needs some point somewhere else from here. Only then desire can exist. It exists as a bridge. A bridge needs two banks. A bridge cannot exist only on this bank. How the bridge can exist? There must be the other. The other bank must be there, only then the bridge becomes possible. Desire is creating a bridge from here to there. And the moment you have gone there and lost this moment, you will live always in an inner tension, inner anguish, and really you will be never existential. You will be always in desires and desires and desires, always longing for the other shore. Even if you can get to the other shore, you will be again longing for the other shore. No shore can be the fulfillment. Desire is self-frustrating. But we are nothing but desires, desires. Can you find anything in you which is not a desire? Even when you are praying, it is a desire. Even when you are meditating, it is a desire. Even when you are thinking of the divine, it is a desire. Everything we convert into desire, this is the disease. We cannot conceive anything without desire. Buddha used to say, there is no God. And he was himself one of the most existential proofs of the divine. He was one of the most existential proofs of the divine. He was the perfect argument for the divine. His presence was divine. And he used to say, there is no God. One day, Sariputta asks him, why you continue to say there is no God? Because we feel when you are, God is. It seems contradictory. A person like you denying God, it seems contradictory. Because you are the proof. You are enough. We don't require any argument. But why you deny? Buddha said, I deny because I don't like God being made an object of desire. If I say God is, you will begin to desire. Then I must get. Then I must reach. And God is something which you cannot desire, and by desiring cannot get. People will ask him, is there existence beyond death? And he will say, no. There is no existence beyond death. Why? Simply because if there is existence beyond death, you will begin to desire it. Is there bliss? Is bliss possible? Buddha will say no. There is only cessation of misery, no bliss. He was one of the rarest genius to see the phenomena of desiring and the tricks of desiring and the cunningness of desiring. He will say, no, there is no bliss at all. Only cessation of suffering. Why? Because if there is bliss positively asserted, one begins to desire it. We convert everything into desiring. We have a mechanism of converting and transforming anything, put anything into it, and it becomes a desire. Even we can desire desirelessness. I have come across persons who will come and say, how to be desireless? How to be desireless? They are asking this for the supreme most desire. How to be desireless? But we go on converting. This is the disease, really. This is the disease. Look at the disease, look at the fact, and don't ask about the how. Look at the fact, this is the fact. Live with the fact. Be aware of your mind's mechanism, how it transforms everything into desiring. And then, in that moment of awareness, desiring stops. And when there is no desiring, you are just here, this very moment. And that moment becomes the door to the infinite. That moment becomes the door to the divine, to the nirvana.